This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. Coming up this morning at 9:30, it's a deeper look, and today host Linda Olsen Osterlind speaks with Robert King, the only freed member of the Angola 3, about the campaign to free Herman Wallace, who is fighting cancer in prison. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 today on Flashpoints, they feature investigative reporter Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars. We'll hear a speech he gave at the 2013 Socialist Conference in Chicago a few weeks ago. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Ren Green interviews actress and author Julia Sweeney, known from Saturday Night Live and her one-woman show, about her new book, If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother. At 11:30 today, Jen Chavez and SW Concert host The Film Show, which features news and interviews about the independent film scene in Portland. But first, it'll be Press Watch. Up next with Teresa Mitchell, it's the news you're not supposed to know. And that's next on KBOO.
The first annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland. Jim Pepper was born in Salem, Oregon and lived in the Portland area for many years. A jazz saxophone composer and singer of Native American ancestry, he became a pioneer of fusion jazz in the late 1960s. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio and the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Newswatch, the latest on the royal afterbirth. Is it bronze plating? Will that be good enough, or should it be gold? Also, the royal colostrum thick enough for a king? We'll have a bacterium-by-bacterium analysis. Here on... Not. This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is the news you're not supposed to know. Latest from Fukushima Diary is that the temperature is still rising in Reactor 6. What's that? Reactor 6, you say? Yeah. There's a whole lot of them over there, and that one didn't blow up yet. The cooling system of the shutdown reactor had been stopped due to an accident while testing the diesel backup. This from Fukushima Diary. They stated it would take 1 hour to restart it, but they ended up taking 2 hours. TEPCO managed to restart the cooling system of Reactor 6 at 12:06 p.m. The reason is not verified. Temperature of Reactor 6 was then 27.6 centigrade. However, following up the article, Reactor 6 coolant system restart took 2 hours and the temperature is increasing even after restarting the coolant system. This is not good. Right now the temperature is 28 degrees centigrade. That's just 84 degrees Fahrenheit. That's not a worry in and of itself. The worry is that the temperature is increasing, as it should not be. What they can't afford to do is have a leaky reactor start to get up to 100 degrees centigrade, which it can easily do with that much, 100 tons or so of uranium in there. Oh, special plutonium-contaminated uranium, yes, due to our brilliant Well, plutonium contamination scheme. Long story. Checking the local radiation levels, I would say that looking at what I've checked over the last year, that radiation levels are slowly increasing in the Portland area. As predicted, after the Fukushima reactors blew up a couple of years ago, I'm getting more used to seeing 24 counts per minute. I got 24 counts per minute from a bus seat as I was riding to work. Not driving, riding to work. 24 is, I got 24 from tuna a few months ago when I checked a sushi restaurant, which is not always the case. I've seen tuna as low as 9 or 12 counts per minute. Of course, that doesn't tell you anything about what is actually causing the radiation. Is it strontium and cesium, or is it something else? So I haven't been eating a whole lot of tuna, almost none, as a matter of fact. And generally in the Portland area, I was used to seeing more, somewhere between 6 and 19 counts per minute, and that seems to be slowly edging up. But I'll take more readings, and I do plan to visit a sushi restaurant this week and see what'll show up on the counter. This is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know, on KBOO Portland. From LiasScience.com, instead of snow and ice whirling on the wind, a foot-deep aquamarine lake now sloshes around a webcam stationed at the North Pole. That's right. You heard it last year. It's happened again. The North Pole has melted. Again, the Meltwater Lake started forming July 13th, following 2 weeks of warm weather in the high Arctic. In early July, temperatures were 2 to 5 degrees Fahrenheit, higher than the average over much of the Arctic Ocean, according to the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Meltwater ponds sprout more easily on young, thin ice, which now accounts for more than half the Arctic sea ice. Departing from the article, and why is that? Well, that's because half of it melted away last year, half of the ice cap. Returning to what is written here, the ponds link up across the smooth surface of the ice, creating a network that traps heat from the sun. Thick and wrinkly multi-year ice, which has survived more than one freeze-thaw season, is less likely to sport a polka dot network of ponds because of its rough, uneven surface. And that's from LiveScience.com, but the takeaway is it's melted. The North Pole has melted, and this has everything to do with global warming, of course. And I have a lot more on that, and it gets worse, if you can imagine that. What's it mean? What's it mean when the North Pole melts? When there's a lake right there at the North Pole buoy. You can see that. Just pull up that information, you'll find a little picture, and there's the buoy floating. Andrew Friedman in Climate Central writes, the Greenland ice sheet is poised for another record melt this year. And already I want to depart from that text. Do you remember last year? The entire Greenland ice sheet melted on the top of it. Now, that confused a lot of people who thought that it had melted away. This is not the case. If it had melted away, you wouldn't have New York. But it melted across its surface, and this could be determined by satellite, which is, well, used to be unusual, but now it's done it again. So this is the press watch that I was sort of dreading doing, wondering if in the progress of global warming, which wasn't in doubt last year, whether that melting situation, melting of the North Pole, melting of the Greenland ice sheet would turn out to be a peak that would disappear and appear some later time. No, here it is again. They write, is approaching a tipping point into a new and more dangerous melt regime in which the summer melt area covers the entire landmass. According to new findings from polar researchers, the ice sheet is the focus of scientific research because its fate has huge implications for global sea levels, which are already rising as ice sheets melt and the ocean warms, exposing coastal locations to greater damage from storm surge-related flooding. Greenland's ice has been melting faster than many scientists expected just a decade ago, spurred by warming sea and land temperatures, changing weather patterns and other factors. Up till now, though, most of the focus has been on ice sheet dynamics, how quickly Greenland's glaciers are flowing into the sea. But new research raises a different basis for concern. The new findings show that the reflectivity of the Greenland ice sheet, particularly the high elevation areas where snow typically accumulates year-round, have reached a record low since records began in 2000. This indicates that the ice sheet is absorbing more energy than normal, potentially leading to another record melt year just 2 years after the 2010 record melt season. Quoting, in this condition, the ice sheet will continue to absorb more solar energy in a self-reinforcing feedback loop that amplifies the effect of warming, end quote. That's Ohio State polar researcher Jason Box on the meltfactor.org blog, meltfactor.org. Greenland is the world's largest island, and it holds 680,000 cubic miles of ice. If all of this ice were to melt, which luckily won't happen anytime soon, the oceans would rise by more than 20 feet. In a new study, Box and a team of researchers described the decline in ice sheet reflectivity and the reasons behind it, noting that, well, and I wanted to mention that this is caused by soot from fires and from aircraft. Returning to the article, noting that if current trends continue, the area of ice that melts during the summer season is likely to expand to cover all of Greenland for the first time on observational record, rather than just the lower elevations at the edges of the continent. As is the case today, the study has been accepted for publication in the open-access journal The Cryosphere. The high reflectivity of snow, albedo in other words, is what has kept Greenland so cold by redirecting incoming heat from the sun back out towards space. But with several factors combining to increase temperatures in Greenland and reduce the reflectivity of the snow and ice cover, the ice sheet is becoming less efficient at reflecting that heat energy. And as a consequence, melt seasons are becoming more severe. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell talking about the melting emergency at the North Pole right now. As I was just saying, the North Pole itself is a lake. Returning to the article, Box research has shown that the change in reflectivity of the Greenland ice sheet during the 12 summers between 2000 and 2011 allowed the ice sheet to absorb an extra 172 quintillion joules of energy, nearly twice the amount of energy consumed in the U.S. in 2009. This extra energy has gone into raising the temperature of the snow and ice cover during the summer. If the area of the Greenland ice sheet experiencing net melt expands to eclipse the accumulation zone of the ice sheet will by definition, be tipped into a state of inevitable decline. That's according to William Colgan, research associate at Cooperative Institute for Research and Environmental Sciences. He did not participate in the new research. I said it gets worse. It does. This from Sophie Yeo. Ice loss has been even faster than usual over the first 2 weeks of July. According to records from the National Snow and Ice Data Center, and of course I'm talking about the Arctic, sea ice normally retreats fastest during July, the warmest month of the year, but this year it has receded at a greater rate than usual, 61% faster than the average rate of decline over the period 1981 to 2010, according to that National Snow and Ice Data Center. While the ice is not quite at 2012 levels yet, the lowest year yet for summer ice, the accelerating downward trend could mean that it could catch up or overtake by mid-September when the Arctic ice is at its minimum. Scientists have predicted that the Arctic could be ice-free by 2054. The trend at the moment suggests it won't be such a bad year in terms of ice retreat as last year, said the professor of ocean physics at University of Cambridge, Peter Wadhams. But he said it might still be a worse year because the trend is accelerating downwards and it's heading for last year's curve. So if it overtakes that, then we're going to end up with a lower minimum than last year, end quote. Lower minimum means even less ice than last year. And last year, half that ice was gone. And the winds, I'm departing from the article now. If you watch the what we call the jet stream in the Northern Hemisphere, you could see that it went wonky. It started spreading all over the place. Big tongues heading south, causing all kinds of turbulent weather, and one of those tongues lapped south and intersected with Hurricane Sandy and became Superstorm Sandy. And what did that do? So now, taking all this together, not just this article, things are happening faster and worse. Easy to predict there will be terrific storms. As a matter of fact, well, as I said, it gets worse. So far, the main ice loss has taken place on the Atlantic side of the Arctic, including East Greenland, Kara, and Laptev Seas. It's better news along the Eurasian coast. The slow retreat in the Beaufort Sea in particular has resulted in the most extensive ice cover there for the last seven summers. However, even though ice remains extensive in the Chukchi Sea, it still has retreated more than in previous years. particularly in 2012 when Shell Oil was forced to reduce the number of well plans and delay drilling operations. Satellite imaging confirms that the melt is still well underway in both these areas. Overall, the extent of the ice on July 15th of this year was 1.06 square kilometers below the 81 to 2010 average. There are various predictions being made on the basis of the trends, but a lot simply depends on the weather. Wadham says, quoting, in the last month of summer, for instance, if we look at our own weather, it has gone from unusually cold to unusually hot. The same thing can happen to the Arctic. Next week, it is predicted, I said it would get worse, that a cyclone will hit the Arctic with potential to cause extra damage because it will arrive at a time when the ice is particularly thin. Last year's Great Arctic Cyclone was the 13th most powerful cyclone of any sort since satellite observations began in 1979 and is estimated to have destroyed about 800,000 square kilometers of ice. Find that at rtcc.org. More on the Arctic cyclone, Christy Klimanaga reporting in Canadian Broadcast Corporation. Over the next few days, a large cyclone will form over the Arctic Ocean, which will start to cause drastic changes in the sea ice in the area. This system will strengthen winds to anywhere from 75 to 100 kilometers per hour over the ocean on Wednesday night into Thursday today, which will start to shift the ice in the area. Last August, a similar system developed in the area, which destroyed 800,000 square kilometers of ice. And departing from that article, yeah, last August. So now it's happening earlier. And now it's happening again. This system looks even stronger than last year's, she writes. Let me repeat that. I said it was getting worse. This system looks even stronger than last year's. And much of the ice in the area is thinner first-year ice because of last year's melt. So there could be drastic changes in the Arctic sea ice over the next week or so. This brings up the methane gun, which I've mentioned many times on Press Watch over the last decade. The thing that seemed so science fiction-y a decade ago, now we're having tremendous plumes of methane. And I've mentioned often that the situation is most certainly worsened by airline overflights at night. Now, right now, we've got summer in the Arctic, and I asked the engineer to play Carole King's Too Late, Baby, because it's summer, and if it were not summer, I could say, oh gosh, there's a melting emergency in the Arctic, and if the president were to ban cross-polar flights at night, then the warming effect of the contrails reflect heat back, could be canceled and reversed. Actually, we know this because September 12th and 13th, when there were no planes allowed in the air in 2001, after the stunt in New York and the Pentagon, except for the bin Laden planes, but that's another story, all the contrails went away, and surface measurements proved that the effect of contrails is to reflect sunlight during the day, mostly, and to hold heat in at night, mostly. And there was no mistaking this effect. This wasn't just a little bit. The temperatures jumped during the day and dropped at night. And so as I was saying, if we were having nights on the pole right now, then we could help and maybe weaken that. Well, I guess it'd be a little too late to weaken the cyclone, but maybe do something about it. But since there's so little night at the pole right now, it's too late, baby. And the methane is so much more efficient as a greenhouse gas. The gigatons of methane in the Arctic, under the water and in the permafrost, which is now melting to the point that structures in the Arctic are now tilting crazily. Methane is being released. So we have to ask now, is the trigger on the methane gun about to be pulled? Your comments or questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. What have you got to say about the Arctic ice emergency? Returning to details on the situation, NOAA and NASA both ranked June 2013 as among the top five warmest June's on record globally. NOAA ranked it fifth warmest, NASA second warmest, used different data, I guess. And that's dating back to the late 1800s, so one of the warmest. But more remarkable was the incredible snow melt that preceded the toasty month and the sudden loss of Arctic sea ice that followed, the amazing decline in northern hemisphere snow cover during May. It's a story few have told, but it's certainly worth noting. In April, hefty northern hemisphere snow cover ranked ninth highest on record, dating back to 1967, but then turned scant, plummeting to third lowest on record during May. Half the existing snow melted away. Climatologist David Robinson said, quote, "This is likely one of the most rapid shifts in near opposite extremes on record, if not the largest from April to May," end quote. And departing from that text, what happens when there is a large reversal in a climate system? Storms happen, generally speaking. Answering my own question, forgive me. Number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187. The snow extent, returning to the article, shrunk from 12.4 million square miles to 6.2 million square miles in a month's time. By June of this year, just 2.3 million square miles of snow remained in the northern hemisphere, a decline of 63% from May, third lowest on record. Robinson said, quote, "In recent years, it hasn't seemed that unusual to have average or even above average winter snow extent rapidly diminish to below average values come spring," end quote. Northern Hemisphere spring snow cover is in the midst of a long-term freefall similar to its relative summer Arctic sea ice extent. You may recall late last summer, the Arctic sea ice extent dropped to its lowest level on record, 49% below the 79-2000 average. Jenny Baker, writing in Cambridge News in Britain, "Shrinking sea ice from the Arctic could bring with it a bill approaching the size of the world economy last year. Researchers have warned of an economic time bomb in the Arctic after economic modeling revealed that if methane is released because of thawing permafrost in the Arctic, its global cost could be 60 trillion. Emissions from the shrinking ice under the East Siberian Sea." There, I think she's using the American usage of trillion being 1,000 billion. Under the East Siberian Sea, a small proportion of the Arctic's total methane reserves could trigger a possibly catastrophic climate change, according to Cambridge University. Peter Wadhams, professor of ocean physics at Cambridge, said, quote, "The imminent disappearance of the summer sea ice in the Arctic will have enormous implications for both the acceleration of climate change and the release of methane from offshore waters, which are now able to warm up in the summer. The massive methane boost will have major implications for global economies and societies," end quote. And he didn't say a word about the royal baby. Gail Whiteman from Erasmus University in Rotterdam said, quote, the global impact of a warming Arctic is an economic time bomb," end quote. This from The Independent, also from Britain. "The sudden release from the melting Arctic of vast quantities of methane, a greenhouse gas at least 20 times more potent than carbon dioxide, is an economic time bomb that could explode at the cost of $60 trillion to the global economy," a study has concluded. And Jack is on the line. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. Such an informative broadcast this morning.
Thank you.
So extensive. You know why it's called Greenland, right?
No, it's pretty icy, so why do they call it Greenland?
Well, that was the name that the Vikings gave it, because they discovered it during the...
During the global warming period.
Yes, during the, what do they call it, the Maunder Minimum, or is that what it's called?
It wouldn't be the Maunder Minimum, because that's a reduction in...
it was during the Middle Ages.
Strength. Yes, the warm period, there was a warm period.
Maybe, there was a warm period during the Middle Ages, and that's when they discovered it, and determined that it was quite a paradise, so they were, they settled it, and they kept going. So,
well, on the fringes, I mean, those miles thick ice didn't disappear while they were there. They just had some coastal lands to settle on.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. But anyway, it was... my point is I think the climate may still be within within historical cycles.
I think you're kidding yourself. Why do you think that?
Well, because the cycles are so long.
Well, okay, historical is one way to put it. Historically, we wouldn't want another such warm period. We would lose coastal.
I don't think there's anything we can do about it. I think that we're approaching a what they refer to as a Holocene maximal.
If you're referring to solar radiation, you've got it backwards. The sun has been cutting back on radiation for several years now.
Well, but again, you know, we're talking about a short cycle. I'm talking about long cycles. But anyway, you know, it's something to talk about, something to think about, and thanks for the informative program.
Thank you for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Sudden release of vast quantities of methane, the clathrate bomb, clathrate gun. Scientific assessment, A scientific assessment of the causes associated with release of Arctic methane into the atmosphere. There, maybe I've gotten that out of me. Haas found that these financial consequences to the world would almost equal the entire global economic output of 1 year. Scientists and economists said that the release of methane trapped for thousands of years beneath the frozen permafrost of the Arctic is one of the most dangerous feedback consequences of the rapid warming of the region, which has seen sea ice diminish by more than a third since the 1970s. I see what my problem is. I've turned the switch towards poetry. Let me just see if I can adjust that, and I'll take another call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, Marie.
Hi, good morning, Teresa. I want to ask, mainly my point is more about the polar flights question. That's my main point. But before I start my quick question, I want to just very respectfully, very strongly disagree with Jack, very strongly disagree. And I'll just tell a quick Alaska reason why. Ironically, I have a brother who's been an Alaska fisherman for many years, actually, ironically named Jack. And he himself witnessed couldn't be Holocene, because now our fish are depleted, and there's a biologist friend I know that his statistics show that there's 10% amount of the fish in the ocean that we used to have. I'm not sure if that's right, but that's what his statistics show.
Oh, yeah, I've heard 5-10%.
Yeah, this is more than just Holocene, when our many animals are impacted. But back to the polar question, I'm grateful you mentioned about the polar crossover, how that's contributing to the carbon in the Arctic. And so my two questions, Teresa, maybe you have the information, are, number one, what are the main flights go over? Like, is it Russia? I mean, is it Paris? What are the main hubs? Which are the flights that are, you know what I mean, like New York, Paris, or whatever? What are the ones that are causing those carbon? And then the other question is, what are the airlines? And maybe we people could be contacting, maybe if they could stop some of those strongest hubs, start with that. In other words, the greatest traffic. And I don't have the data. Maybe you do. And I'll get off and let you hear your answer, Teresa.
Well, okay. You can get off if you want, or you can stay on, but I don't have a direct answer. Although I did notice that the National Academy of Sciences mentioned air traffic. And I thought, oh, finally. Are they going to say something about air traffic, contrails, holding in heat at night? I certainly hope so. Look at that, the time's gone. Here I am just jabbering away about, just this little thing that the polar ice cap melted, even while we're trying to celebrate the king being born. What'd they name him? Jesus Christ? I can't remember. Something like that. Well, anyway, you've been listening to Press Watch. Stay tuned, because Linda Olsen-Osterlund is coming up and with another fantastic interview, this one from someone who has actually escaped from the Angola 3, and you'll need to hear the details on that. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
It was the year 1971 when the Black Panther movement began in Angola, Louisiana. Wood, Fox, and Wallace were the organizing soldiers trying to protect themselves and others from the corruption and degradation that is most time covered by the prison wardens in a segregated situation. Trying to mend bridges is a difficult one when the privilege is given to the whites. Blacks in solitary confinement are trying to fight for some rights. Constant struggles day and night when the evidence is planted after the match strike. Diversion, confusion, creating the illusion that what is not. It's like being stuck back on the farm. Life is tough. It's getting caught between a hard place and a rock. Here is a place where survival of fittest is faced. Here is a place that operates as they did in the slave days. The bat breaking labor from dawn till dusk day. There's certainly some crazy ways. Inmates lie and they steal and they wheel and they deal. And I don't think they feel like in the case of King, who was duct taped and shackled up in a court of law by a judge. No one showed him some love. Is there no justice in the minds of the prosecutions? Is there no justice in the minds of the jury's and judge? Is justice truly blind or is color divine? They say that we ended those times. Is there no justice in the minds of the prosecutions? Is there no justice in the minds of the jury's and judge? Is justice truly blind or is color divine?
Good morning. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for a deeper look on KBOO Community Radio. I want to thank